we're here to talk about tax disputes in Ireland and the UK, and I have with me two wonderful representatives from their respective countries, Neil Casey, a partner in transfer pricing with KPMG Ireland, who has a special focus on the US corridor and loads of experience. Welcome to the podcast, Neil. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, guys.
And also Nick Stevert, a director with transfer pricing, controversy management, and dispute resolution with KPMG UK, who joined us from HMRC, the UK Tax Authority, where he spent 18 years, and during that time also spent a number of years as a competent authority team leader. Welcome, Nick.
Thanks for having me.
As we dive in, I would like to understand just an overview of some of the controversy trends that are occurring in the UK and Ireland. Nick, can you start on the UK Taxing Authority? What are you seeing from HMRC?
What we're seeing is more and more controversy, more and more challenges to transfer pricing. The latest HMRC transfer pricing stats demonstrate that. Lots of yield from inquiries, lots of resource focused on that. It also gives an indication of the length of inquiries, basically looking at a three-year, very detailed and granular and intensive process once you are under a TP inquiry. Because HMRC are very focused on the facts on the ground, what people are doing and where they're doing it. And they focus a lot on the substance rather than the kind of legal agreements. It's very much the substance over form and very resource intensive. That's the big issue. Lots of other countries are doing the same thing. Transfer pricing is the number one risk for large businesses. HMRC is taking a structured approach to addressing all the risk on transfer pricing. When they finish one inquiry, those resources will then be on the next taxpayer.
It's happened similar in Ireland, although we are coming from a slightly different position in that there isn't necessarily the same history there. The regime in Ireland started in 2010, and I'd say it was probably fairly light touch for first 5 years or so. But off the back of the BEPS initiative.
It makes sense that the base erosion and profit shifting or BEPS initiative would influence the transfer pricing landscape. What else are you saying?
We've really seen a big step change in the transfer pricing landscape in Ireland, certainly in the last few years. 2020 brought with it a big overhaul of the law governing transfer pricing in Ireland. It brought a lot of transactions that were outside the scope of transfer pricing into scope. For example, transactions like royalty income streams of financial transactions all within the transfer pricing scope. Now, with that, Irish Revenue has become better equipped to undertake audits, and some of those are fairly detailed. The other thing we're seeing as well is post BEPS 1, there was a lot of IP onshored into Ireland. And as a result, now Ireland finds itself being counterparty to a transaction with the treaty country, particularly the US. And so there's a big uptick in the level of APAs that have been undertaken. And indeed, there's obviously still an inventory of MAP there. So in general, we're really seeing an uptick in APA activity and some really big APAs on for large multinationals.
That seems to be a global trend. Advanced pricing agreements and mutual agreement procedures, APAs and MAPs. We talked a lot about that, and we have a previous podcast episode that dives into those topics. Are there any major notable cases in your respective jurisdictions that you'd like to comment on?
Often Ireland is the principal company in the structure, and typically what we find ourselves most involved in is defending foreign-based tax audits. Ireland is the counterparty to the transaction. It's not necessarily the case that I think Irish Revenue is particularly focused on tax take all the time, but it's ensuring that taxpayers are compliant, they are considered in their positions, and that there's no situations out there that will be uncovered in time where it really hasn't been given a thorough shake of the trees if you are under audit.
Nick, what are you seeing from a UK perspective?
In terms of litigation, the HMRC are looking to agree adjustments rather than get to court. Historically, there haven't been a lot of transfer pricing litigation cases that have got to court. In their latest transfer pricing statistics, actually, HMRC talk about the fact that they're litigating various international tax risk disputes. And my understanding of that is it links to diverted profits tax in the UK, which is a quite high profile issue since it was introduced in April 2015. At the moment, it's a separate tax, but it's used to incentivize businesses to change their arrangements and make transfer pricing adjustments that are on a CT, corporate tax or corporation tax basis. If they don't do that, then HMRC has the powers to charge what diverted profits tax, which has a higher tax rate and other kind of disadvantages. That all links into the kind of focus that HMRC's had for the last 10 years or so on really tackling what they see as kind of high levels of transfer pricing risk.
I would like to talk about competent authority, and especially Nick, with your experience in that role, acting as a competent authority. Would you explain what competent authority is?
Many countries in the world want to encourage multinational businesses or globalization for the benefit of everybody. When you have international businesses, their tax affairs are quite complex, and the countries sign treaties between each other to agree how those businesses will be taxed. And one of the key issues is transfer pricing, because there's scope for disagreement around that and double taxation. The competent authority is the process where the double taxation is eliminated by agreement. The two countries will get together to discuss the issues and negotiate if necessary to find a way, as much as they can, to eliminate that double taxation so the business is only taxed once on the same profits. It's definitely been an evolving area. Broadly speaking, there's more and more countries that are becoming actively involved in competent authority work. The experience is growing and the process is becoming better and more efficient, but there's a long way to go. At the moment, the OECD is trying to amend the international tax rules again, and the risk of all of those changes is double taxation. So there's a lot of focus on competent authorities to eliminate the double taxation that may otherwise occur.
It feels like there's a big reliance on this as a avenue for resolution. Neil, what's the feeling in Ireland on competent authority?
My experience with the Irish Competent Authority is that they now have significant experience built up over the last 6 or 7 years. The APA program only formally started in Ireland actually in 2016. In those early years, there wasn't a lot of practical experience. Now, obviously, there was MAP in place before that, and there was quite a lot of experience in relation to MAP, which isn't a similar process. But on the APA side, which is more proactive, forward-looking resolution, the Irish Competent Authority certainly is demonstrating that it has a lot of experience. As I said, their resources have increased. I would say there are individuals on that team that have specialist experience, whether that's been through practice or coming from some of the firms. And they generally seem to be very progressive in their approach and have good relationships internationally with the respective competent authority counterparties.
Looking more specifically at UK and Ireland and their relationship, let's talk about some common trends and things we see between taxpayers and tax authorities in these two nations.
There's a tax rate differential. So that's one factor in the discussions. And the other thing, a lot of businesses have a regional headquarters or a hub or a principal in Ireland or sometimes in the UK. So that can drive quite complex issues and ones that can involve quite a lot of money. You've got the more routine transfer pricing issues that you see between the UK and Ireland, because some multinational businesses, for example, operate in Ireland as one market, actually, and there's a lot of commonality there. But at the more complex ends, some of the more cutting edge and high profile cases are going to be UK Ireland cases because of the arrangements that are often put in place with regional headquarters and particularly with US businesses. So there's larger caseloads around than UK and Ireland, but in terms of profile and interest and complexity, it's right up there in terms of the most interesting ones.
The UK would be very commonly, aside from the US, probably Ireland's biggest trade partner, and a lot of businesses that are expanding, a natural place for them to do that would be into the UK market. I'm talking about big Irish companies that would have started life in Ireland but would have expanded quickly into the UK. So there is a lot of interesting transactions that arise out of that that require a lot of thinking, get focus from the competent authorities, and give rise to some interesting challenges. Off the back of Brexit, there has been further uptick in the level of APAs being undertaken between the UK and Ireland. And some of that is in the more financial services world. But it's certainly, we're seeing a lot more constructive engagement between both competent authorities. And when you look at Ireland's stats in terms of resolution, in the last number of years, it's been above 92% in terms of resolving all cases that end up being discussed between the competent authorities.
You led me to my next question, Neil. The relationship between UK and Ireland can be complicated. You're both members of the OECD and largely follow the OECD rules, but no longer both part of the EU. Nick, I'm curious to hear what else has rocked your world as the UK left the EU.
Brexit is obviously the big one, and lots of businesses have to change their supply chains. In terms of MAP processes, I think we'll see more down the line in the next couple of years as those arrangements start to be challenged. The only other transfer pricing change from Brexit might be the fact that the UK isn't part of the EU arbitration directive anymore. However, I don't think that's really that significant because most of the treaties now have mandatory binding arbitration in them. Arbitration is an interesting issue, actually, and it's not a UK-Ireland issue specifically. It's one of the things that the OECD encourage countries to put in to try and encourage MAP processes. So elimination of double taxation to encourage it to happen more quickly. It's one of the measures to try and make sure that it's done within 2 years. And if it's not done within a reasonable amount of time, there is provision to effectively to guarantee elimination of the double taxation. I think as the years go on, we'll see more arbitration and quicker MAP settlements.
The idea of arbitration is good to encourage collaboration and to negotiate quicker to an outcome that's acceptable to all. Arbitration isn't particularly prevalent in Ireland yet at this point, but I think we're going to see more of it. It's a really interesting place to be, I find, and it's often not just an advisor's perspective or a taxpayer's perspective. There's often a lot of underlying policy matters that governments are having to grapple with in negotiating some of these positions.
So arbitration is available for when competent authorities of different countries just cannot reach a resolution for whatever reason. Perhaps they feel particularly strongly about a certain position out of principle, whatever. If the issue cannot be resolved, both countries appoint a panel of independent experts to come in and make the ultimate decision, which will eliminate double taxation. It's been tested, but sounds like it's still relatively new. And it doesn't have to be limited to just two countries, right? We're seeing trends for more.
Another issue that comes up is that arbitration assumes two tax authorities, but increasingly in the value chain, you've got three tax authorities that might be involved. That gives the tax authority in the middle a bit of sensitivity about being on the hook for something where they think, well, this should be passed back to the third country. It's that country that's the entrepreneur in the model.
That's something that's very topical in Ireland at the moment. Around 2017-18, off the back of the BEPS initiative, there was a lot of IP onshore to Ireland and indeed back to the US. But Ireland finds itself now often being principal company for rest of world markets, perhaps paying for access to technology that's owned in the US and agreeing what an appropriate royalty rate is, but then running the risk of falling into disputes with some of the market jurisdictions across Europe and beyond that, being squeezed in the middle whereby you've got tax authorities asserting one thing on both sides. That's a tricky issue to resolve. By their nature, most tax treaties are bilateral and not multilateral. Trying to agree multi-party positions, being the person in the middle, is just very challenging. Ireland finds itself having to deal with a lot of that. There is the emergence of a series of bilateral APAs that look something like a multilateral APA. And with that is more complexity and more stakeholders. Still, a lot of taxpayers are pretty committed to the process because I think they see, one, a lot of risk, but two, this a way to give them some certainty in what are very material transactions.
HMRC sees it from both sides. They're sometimes the country in the middle and they're sometimes the country at the end. There is a history in the UK of doing multilateral APAs and they do work. They do take time, but in the long run, they pay off. Increasingly, we're seeing more multilateral MAPs too, which is harder to deal with because it's always better to deal with things in advance when the relevant people are around and when someone hasn't collected tax than trying to get a repayment years later. But we're seeing an uptick of interest in both. But on the APA side, there is a history of the process working and including with Ireland, but it does take some time. It really is the only option in certain scenarios. If you've got a really big, complex transaction, it's going to be audited somewhere and the country in the middle isn't going to be wanting to be stuck relieving something that isn't due to them, because the danger could be that they get a non-arm's length return after they've had the MAPs with the market jurisdictions.
It's certainly in our case in Ireland, the situation that the US is a party to the transaction and the IRS is reasonably sympathetic to the challenges of resolving these types of arrangements, which are complex. Yes. Because the US found itself in that situation itself, being in the middle, if you go back a number of years ago, whereby a Japanese parent group was using the US as its principal company for South American countries. Based on my experience dealing with APA and the IRS, they are constructively trying to support other competent authorities in kind of a meeting of minds.
When I was in HMRC, the competent authority role, I did participate in multilateral meetings with Ireland and with the US and various other countries, but every country is a little bit different. What I would say is happening at the moment is that more countries are experimenting with some of these practices. You will see more multilateral APAs and MAPs involving more countries as time goes on.
you sometimes see the motivation for groups to take on solving some of the complexity around these transactions. And if I take my US, Ireland, UK as an example, where Ireland is the principal company and the UK is the market jurisdiction, taxpayers often say, well, if I could get a three-way agreement here between those countries, I can use that as a benchmark APA. If I subsequently end up getting audited in Italy, Germany, Spain, France, I'm able to demonstrate to those tax authorities that I've been through a process, which was a very rigorous one with three-way tension in it.
That's a really powerful thing to be able to demonstrate. If all of these different parties can get in line, then everyone else should be able to look to that as a reference. If there's anything that's evidence from this conversation, your two islands will continue to be surrounded by controversy. And I appreciate you both, Nick and Neil. Thank you so much for joining me and sharing all of this. It's been really insightful.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining me on this adventure in transfer pricing. See you next time.